Hello, and welcome to another episode of Annotated 911. I'm one host, Fradit. I'm here with my other host.
Spoon.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 9, Fighting Back. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think we have talked about this before, but I really love the intro to this episode.
Yeah.
The way it starts, so upbeat and hopeful and optimistic. And like, you kind of know it's going to crash and burn, but it's still sort of a gut punch when it does.
It's such a gut punch. My note for that is 2 months later, all caps, oof.
Just sitting alone in this dim living room.
Yeah. Miserable. They just like cut the song and just boom. There she is. Alone in a wheelchair in the dark. This episode is, I mean, obviously it's supposed to be a good hen episode, but they nailed it. It is a good hen episode.
It is a great hen episode. Yeah, and I mean, I think especially because given the nature of this show, she was always going to get better. There was no way they were going to have her actually be permanently disabled because that's just not the kind of show it is, for better or for worse. But I do like, in light of that, that they kind of gave us an episode that emphasized the seriousness of this and how difficult it is for her. And it's not just, you know, be upbeat and hopeful and everything will work out immediately.
Yeah. Connecting back to what we talked about last time, it is still like a little absurd what they chose.
It is. It is just,
Like 2 months in, her... Two months in, her disease has been progressive enough that it, like, all of her muscle and connective tissue has been destroyed to the point where she can barely move and needs a wheelchair and can't open jars and stuff. But don't worry, she can grow it all back, apparently, even though it's an autoimmune condition. And those are notoriously difficult to fight. But it's hen, so she can fight anything.
She's a superhero. It's all right.
Brief dip back to the opening I love the opening montage with everybody like having their little part in like being on her team. But like, can we get Buck on some sort of cooking show or something? Because he's like an aspic god.
He would be the talk of the 1960s garden party.
Yes, absolutely.
What was that thing? Like, it was so skillfully executed.
Yes.
But why?
He's combining two things he loves, caring for hen and learning weird new food things. He's like, now's my chance. I mean, it is really healthy. It like, if she's got like a connective tissue issue, like gelatin is great for that. So I get where his...
You can bring yourself to eat it. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe give her the fruit kind. It's still gelatin, but there's fruit. it's not.
I mean, meat. I do think that it was also just to see the look on her face.
Like, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
To make her laugh.
Yes. Yeah.
Narratively speaking, but I think also from a character perspective, it was a little bit like, this is supposed to be fun, and I'm going to fuck with you a little bit.
Here's your sardine loaf.
I looked that up after the episode, and apparently it's an actual thing that exists that people make.
Okay.
He did not just invent it.
Love that guy. I love that we got a little bit of Dancing Eddie.
Yep.
We need more of that.
In Buck's backyard.
In Buck's backyard, because that's a backyard they have access to. These are the things about, like, network TV shows that I love, where it's like, clearly the decision was made pragmatically on the back end, because it's like, okay, where can we, like, what sets do we have access to at the moment, and where can this scene we've written logically take place? The house that's playing Buck's house has a nice backyard. Let's put it there. But now suddenly there's like implications.
Exactly. Like, you just all went over to Buck's house to do this.
Yeah. Because realistically, Eddie's coming to her and they're doing it in Hen's backyard, which clearly Hen's wonderful craftsman home would have a backyard.
Right.
But,
and we've seen it in the wedding episode, but I think,
yes.
Is that one a set or is that a house?
That one's a set, yeah.
That's what I thought, yeah. So they would need to come up with another backyard.
The Hen Wren house is interesting because, like, for the first several seasons, it was an actual house, and they just sort of like used the like bits of it. But yeah, it's been a set recently, and they changed the layout. So either they moved or they were just like, "Eh, let's make it how we want."
Alternate dimension.
Yeah, but yeah, now it is a set, but it's a set that doesn't have a backyard. Yeah, it's so bleak. I love that they're like, they were like really maxing out color grading in this episode. Whenever it's like head in the wheelchair, it's like gray and sad and dark.
No sunlight in LA.
No. Which I don't know, like that's a vibe I kind of fuck with, is like depression things, but with like LA weather where like, where like the weather is not agreeing with the mood.
Just a little bit more surreal, yeah.
Yeah. Or like you're being mocked. Like, it's so sunny out, but you feel like shit. Okay, the first call they have, the Cluck and Plux seizure call. What are they doing just wandering in with no respirator or like... It's like Galaxy Quest, like, is there air? You don't know. Like, what are they doing? Like, a whole room is like, and he's even there. He's like, Buck, check the air. And it's like,
just in case you can breathe it.
Yeah. If you find something bad, it's too late, I guess, because you guys just wandered on in with no PPE. Like, what is this? There's a lot of that going around this episode. Harry's like climbing up the ladder
with no
fucking rope. I have never once in this show seen them climb the ladder without a rope. Except for like Eddie, obviously, when Buck died, but that's like part of it, you know, like,
right.
This is like a training session and he's just not roped up. What is that?
If he falls. I guess. Good thing there was the canopy there.
This is the gauntlet you have to get through. When they're like, if you manage to graduate, they meant that seriously.
If you survive.
Because literally, if you survive.
We may just, like, let you fall off a building. Don't worry about it.
The chief's like, luckily a mezzanine caught him. Yeah, I guess. Like, should have been a rope catching him, but maybe that's just me. I don't...
I was having that, exact same thought. Like, that seems unsafe. I do like his, the other trainee. I wish we had seen more of her. She was
Norris. Brave. Norris. I loved her. I ship it.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it.
I love that she's just like a little tiny, like, Spitfire. She's like a full foot shorter than everybody else. It's great. I hope we get to see her again. Like, she does feel like a character they could bring back. They bump into each other at a call or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved the Grant family stuff this episode with Harry and, like, you know, Athena's like worried, like them just sort of like working through this whole thing together. Athena's rightfully scared.
Yeah, very reasonably. My one criticism of it, which is not the Harry and Athena stuff, but this is the episode where it really starts to feel to me like they didn't know what to do with May this season. Because they clearly want her in the scenes, but they have nothing for her to do, so she's just kind of like there.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah, because, you know, they signed them both as series regulars before the season started.
But they didn't have a plan for her, clearly.
They did not. I like what they eventually found.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Think ahead, guys. Like,
started that earlier.
And it is a little bit of the thing of, like, I don't know. It's on the one hand, I am like, well, you clearly didn't think of anything for May to be doing. But on the other hand, it's also like, that is generally how this show goes of like,
yeah, they do rotate who's,
yeah, they kind of just rotate who is like, okay, like, you know, like several episodes back, I was talking about how there's like very little Buck and Eddie in the front half of this season. They're, or at least them together. There's like,
right.
But when I was like watching it as it was airing, I was fully expecting that to change in the back half of the season.
Right, which it did.
Which it did. And so this
we do get a lot of, or more May stuff in the back half of the season as well.
Yes.
But it would have felt more, I don't know, organic to me if they had clearly been setting something up with her, which it doesn't really feel like they were. It kind of felt like they were spinning their wheels with her.
Yeah, absolutely not. Like they, you know, even if it was just like they could have started the law school thing earlier where,
right,
you know, she just mentions that she is like doing classes or whatever, which maybe they did like offhand in one of these episodes. I can't recall.
I don't think they ever mentioned what she was actually studying.
Yeah. So, you know, there is like, I don't know, just do better, Tim.
Do better.
Think ahead ever. This is not the only time we can accuse him of not thinking ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. However, the Harry and Athena stuff in it was extremely good, I thought.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course, it's Angela Bassett, so she knocks it out of the park.
Oh, of course. Athena has a lot of good stuff in this episode with, like, you know, the stuff with Harry, but then also the stuff with, like, she has a great scene with Karen.
Yep.
Where they're talking about supporting Hen and feeling like they're failing to support Hen. I don't know. This whole thing with Hen is, it like dovetails really nicely with what we were talking about last episode with the whole like part of the lesson that needs to be learned here is to not only ask for help, which I guess she technically never did because they all found out.
Right.
On accident.
Dramatically.
And then are like, we're helping you. But then to also accept help.
Right.
Which she does at first. She's like, yes, let's do this. I'm accepting help. Like, we're going to get through this. But, you know, eventually now she's like keeping everybody out, not letting people like, she pretends to be asleep when Athena comes to see her. And like, there's a whole scene with the team talking about how she won't see them or let them in or let them help or anything like that. And so, yeah, I think that is like part of the vibe here is like, you know, perseverance in the face of failure, but also like let people keep helping you. Like,
yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, it's let people keep showing up for you, even if it doesn't seem like it's helping, even if you don't feel like you're getting better. Frankly, even if you're not getting better, you still can't shut everybody out forever.
Yeah. And it's really good. It's like this really chewy, crunchy thing of like, yeah, she's got, you know, her pride and self-image have just been completely destroyed by this thing.
Yeah.
She had a certain image of herself for the last 15 years, you know, there's like a few places in this episode where they like are really hammering home this thing of Hen and her self-image as a paramedic.
Yeah.
And she's talking about how she was a paramedic and how, you know, she there's like various points in the episode where she like, the word was seems like very heavy to me where like she was a paramedic. She used to be a paramedic. She's not anymore. Like, and she's
that scene where her physical therapist collapses, obviously is the big one.
Yes. And I didn't make note of it, but like there is a scene like before that where, yeah, she just like casually throws it out, like in dialogue, that she like was a paramedic. Like, and so it's clear that like she's already sort of like internalized this.
Right.
You know, it's like when the editors on Wikipedia like change the article whenever like somebody dies.
When somebody dies. Yeah.
So, and then, yes, it's like all culminated in this scene where she can't successfully do CPR, which that scene is one of like they do the thing that really annoys me, which is like when the first responders fail to immediately call 911 before they do anything else.
Though I do like, I was noticing this, I like the 911 call because this show really loves to do like the kind of punny, silly, panicky calls. And then we get Hen, who is clearly a professional at giving the information that's necessary.
I love whenever one of them has to call 911 because the calls, they are so different. They're like, they like know all the, like, the one that like immediately springs to mind is Buck calling 911 on his radio and his Jeep in the Halloween episode.
Yeah. Yep.
While he's driving and he's just like, Evan Buckley, blah, 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 you know, just like saying everything, like I'm heading north, like whatever. But like, and Hen's call here is like exactly the same way. And I love that. But like, so my only gripe is like, girl, your phone is right there. Call
first.
Call then. First, then get down on the ground and like try to do CPR and fail. Because even if she was successfully doing CPR, she needs to start the call first to, you know, like, but.
For the drama.
It's for the drama. They got to, drama comes before everything on this show. And, you know, I guess I respect it. They know what, as I always say, they know what show they're making. And I know what show I'm watching. But yeah, so like, I love that whole. That whole thing, this whole, like, it's kind of similar to what they did with Eddie in season 5, where there's this, like, or even last season, where there's this sort of, these are all people who, like, their self-identity is to whatever degree, sort of, or with Buck in season 3. Like, these are people who their identity is, like, wrapped up in this job they've chosen.
Right.
It is, like, a very identity forward sort of job. Where it does kind of take your, it does sort of take up a really large chunk of your life and like who you see yourself as. So it's like, well, I'm not a firefighter anymore, I'm a Uber driver.
Or even Maddie last season with the, when she couldn't go back to work at dispatch right away.
Yes.
Like it's these are people who have kind of framed their sense of self around this job and what it means to them. And it's very difficult when they can't do it.
Yes. And like with Eddie, at least he's still like, he doesn't want to be an Uber driver and he feels weirdly ashamed about it, but he's doing it for his kid, which his identity as a father comes before his identity as a firefighter. So he has that to lean on. Hen has like, or at least the way they've framed it in this episode, she doesn't have that sort of thing to still lean on because her whole like ability to like act in the world has been compromised. So it's not like she's just like she's out of the job and like not a paramedic right now. She's like also struggling to be a mom to her kids in the same way that she used to.
Yeah,
she needs so much help. So
yeah, and I mean that's such a thing for Hen, is always being the person who helps, who can be relied on, who will show up, and she can't do that, and it's very, very difficult for her, obviously, as we see.
Yeah,
which I also, that scene with her and Tony was so great.
It's so good. Tony, best parent on the show. Tony, my love. I love Tony. The actress has just like,
She's
so much charisma and like weight, like performance weight behind her. She's so good. I don't know. I need to look up her name, but like, she's so good. She just has so much gravitas. There we go.
Gravitas. That's, yes.
There's the word I was looking for. But yes, I love that scene. And it's so expertly written because there's, I love the like, the turn they take where she's like, let me read you this thing.
And Hen's like, yeah, that's exactly it.
Well, and at first she's like, oh, sure, okay, I get, what'd you like
one find? Of your a, self-help.
One did of you find like a books. Self-help book or a poetry or something? Like, what do you like? She's like, you know, jerk off motions, basically. But yeah, then she's like, no, it's it, these are your words because you've done this before and you can do it again.
Which I like that callback because that's like an old callback from what, season two, I think.
Yes.
When they brought up that she had been shot as a teenager.
Yes. Well, and then even deeper because it's, you know, it's Aisha's own personal life story. So I imagine for her that was, you know, very emotionally weighty to do all this. But and then there's even the further turn of, you know, she reads through the journal and it seems like most of what's in the journal is like the hard, dark recovery period.
Right.
But then there's this little other page folded in there and they turn that into like this beautiful voiceover moment.
Yeah.
That turns it around and like brings it back to the positive, hopeful show that we all know and love. And it's really good. They just really nailed it. I'm so
great.
It makes me so happy because it's like this is like this whole arc where like Hen gets all the attention is like she deserves that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She so rarely gets to be the focus of like such a meaty central plot like this. And it's always really great when it happens.
The hair. Yeah. So the hairy stuff I loved. It's nice that they're like giving him the focus to kind of like really do his like little trainee probationary arc justice so that it doesn't feel like, I mean, it is pretty rushed. You know, it's like.
Right. Yeah.
A handful of episodes. And he's like, I did it. I'm a probie now. Like,
well, that's how time works on 911. Yes. Right?
Yeah. But I really, really loved it. I loved him showing up at Buck's house. Can I hide out here?
It's from your mom. Absolutely not.
That depends on who you're hiding from. Which then that, you know, like, I love that moment, one, because it's funny whenever, like, Buck is scared of Athena, but two, because it leads into just one of my very favorite Buck moments later, where he's just the bravest, bestest boy, goes to confront Athena about her kid. Like, this is, like, one of, like, you know, this is one of those attributes of Buck's that is, like, I would say more, it can bite him in the ass, but I would say more often than not, it's one of his greatest strengths is like his willingness to just like butt his nose in where it doesn't necessarily belong, but like he feels strongly about it and like, you know, can't help but want to try and fix things. And so, you know, he's like, well, nobody can like say these words except for me. So.
Or nobody will anyway.
Yeah. So I'm going to go do it. So, you know, like I don't just him like showing up to confront Athena on her kid. And he does it so beautifully and gently, too. And it's like, I don't know. It just it feels so like just brave and lovely to me. I just love him so much in that moment. And also, I love that jacket. He looks gorgeous. Everybody else who was saying that it looks like bowling alley carpet or something like.
Wrong. Lies.
I think it's one of the most beautiful outfits. Like he's never looked more beautiful.
I love that he's like anxious about doing it clearly too. Like he's like, there is a good chance that I am going to get shouted at about this and I probably deserve it. However.
Yeah.
And, you know. And I love that she's able to hear him.
Yes.
Because she doesn't want to like drag Harry down. She doesn't want to hold him back. Rather, she just wants him to be safe and okay. And I think that's kind of the realization that she's kind of grappling with is that he's not her little boy anymore. He's going to be an adult no matter what. And she's got to live with that. And he's got to learn how to do it. And she's willing and able to support him. It's just scary.
Yeah. And I love that they, that is a trait that I frequently have to give Athena props for is like, she clearly has like, control freak helicopter parent tendencies and often for good reason, like one of her kids tried to commit suicide as a teenager and one of her kids was kidnapped by a serial killer rapist guy.
Yeah, like this is concerning stuff.
Yeah. And her husband just died, you know, she's been through a lot. Her fiance got murdered, you know, there's like, she's got good reasons for it. Plus just like how her own mother was.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, frequently when push comes to shove, she like digs deep and finds a way to rein in that instinct of hers.
Right. And I think it's something she, I remember her having a conversation with, and I guess it would have been season 5 when May wants to move out. And she has this conversation with, I think, Hen, saying, I don't want to be that voice in the back of my daughter's head.
Yeah.
I want to support her even if it's hard. And I think it's a very similar thing here with Harry. She doesn't want to be that voice telling him he can't do it.
Yeah. Well, and that's like basically what Buck says.
Yeah. Which I mean, she knew, but she was scared.
Yes. But yeah, so yeah, props to Athena for, you know, digging deep and like doing the right thing as a parent, even when it's hard and scary. And I love that they sort of I love how her speech kind of brought it around to, oh, she knows. You know, she's done it from the other side.
Yeah.
Harry's whole life, he's like been scared for his mom and she used to do it. You know, she would go to work anyway. Like,
yeah.
So it would be a little hypocritical of her.
For her to not. Yeah. But it's kind of this first moment of her really kind of reaching out to him as an adult.
Yes.
Not just as her kid.
Yeah. It was very much like fellow adult.
Yes.
And it was great. It was like a really beautiful moment between them. And I, you know, I really liked it. And then they sent him up that ladder without a rope again.
Again. At least he didn't fall this time.
It's just like, what is going on here?
Kind of like the wearing helmets in a fire. It's for dramatic purposes only.
Yes. Yeah. And don't strap it on.
You may need to pull it off your head at a critical moment.
Yeah. To give a beautiful speech. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Okay. I like briefly mentioned this, but I did love that scene with Athena and Karen where.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, even Karen is like, I don't know what to do. Like, she's not handling this on her own, but I can't, like, force her to do it. Like, what do I do? And Athena was very brilliantly was like,
give her you need a to hire villain. It out. hire out the villain. I did really like it's a he has a fairly brief role, but I did really like her physical therapist because he clearly knows that his role is partly to be the antagonist.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like whenever I do encounter physical therapists in life, like, I feel like that, yeah, that's like, they know that. They're like, yes.
I know you want to punch me in the face. It's okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I did like the guy that they got to play him. He brought some fun energy to the role.
Yeah. Yeah, and Karen just kind of dropping him there and being like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
Like, you can't argue with me about this if I'm gone.
Yeah, exactly. Here he is. She even did, like, drag out the bye at the end. Like, bye!
She's so pleased with herself. It's so funny.
And, yeah, and I loved that. I loved that, I don't know, he looked like a physical therapist, too. I just thought they cast him perfectly. He was great. I loved him.
Yeah.
Some of the other calls were, like, I don't know, they had that call with the guy that didn't get hit by a car.
Oh, yeah, the woman who, like, beat him half to death with his skateboard.
Yeah.
I don't think you could actually do that as self-defense. I think there is, like, at a certain point, this is no longer self-defense. You're just kicking his ass.
I don't know. I don't know the legalities there. I mean, it is all on tape of him, like, very aggressively trying to steal her purse. Because when she didn't give it up, he got pretty physical with her. But, yeah, kind of I mean, it's fun. But, like, you know, this is not one of those episodes where it's like, I mean, I guess thematically it is. It does fit in the fighting back theme.
Yeah, sort of.
But it doesn't, because Maggie, who had a day, does, like, fight back. But I don't know.
She had such a bad day.
Yeah. It did kind of feel like, I don't know, like filling time. Or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like kind of both of the, it was just the two calls, right?
I think so.
I kind of felt like both of them were sort of that. It was like, you need to do something with the calls. So here we go.
Here's some calls. We need to have calls in this episode.
Sometimes they're very, very thematic and clearly tied in to what's going on in the characters. And I felt like less so this time.
Yes, which is fine.
Yeah,
it works. I'm not mad about it. It's fine. Part of, you know, like, that is part of what I come to the show for. I don't want it to be, you know, no calls, never them right. Doing their job or whatever. Because, like, part of the overarching theme of the show entirely is, like, these people are having all of, you know, they're human beings with, like, personal lives. But they still have to go do their job.
Right.
Even if, like, shit's hard personally, you know, like, and you can't really, that has to be in the show or it's not in the show.
It's not 911 if you're not doing the 911 calls. Really. Yeah.
Here's, like, a random thing from when Harry went to Buck's house. Buck has so much art all over his walls, and I love it. And he had quite a bit of art in the loft as well. And I just, I remember when I was doing research for my Buck's Loft post, like, 500 years ago at this point. But in real life, that actual apartment that they filmed in originally is in downtown LA, and when I was, like, looking around at the neighborhood that loft is in, there's a lot of art galleries around there, and they have, like, art walk nights, like, once a month, where, like, all the galleries, like, are like, hey, come, everybody come, like, walk around and, like, go in all the galleries and look at all the art or whatever. So I loved, like, picturing him, like, getting into that and, like, doing, like, going on these art walks and, like, finding art and stuff, or, like, Los Angeles has, like, a lot of good flea markets and stuff. So, like, I don't know. I love picturing Buck having this, like, art hobby where he,
I mean, he clearly does have kind of a vision for it too. It's not like there's a specific aesthetic he goes to, which is weird abstracts.
Yes. Yeah, like, quirky, poppy, just, like, sort of, yeah, like, weird, like, I mean, he's sort of broadened his tastes in this new place. Like, there's, like, the the like fish one, and you know, like there's some more. He's kind of like broadening. I don't know. There's like a whole. I don't think they're doing it on purpose.
No, but it's interesting.
But still. You can make like a cute little like off screen narrative of like Buck like having this art hobby where he's like going and looking for art, and I enjoy picturing that of him being like, oh, well, let's go to the flea market. I need to find some art.
Suits him.
It does suit him. I could just picture him like dragging people along with him, like, you know, like, or you know, they're looking for something else, whoever he's dragging along, probably Eddie. But yes, I enjoy it. Speaking of Eddie, there's very little in this episode, but
there's very little Eddie. But we do get to see him dance.
We do get to see him dance, which is so funny because before they were like, Eddie used to do ballroom dance. Like anytime somebody brought up Eddie and dancing, Ryan, he still seems to like he's answered questions since then, since they introduced the ballroom dancing thing. And he still seems to have like not downloaded like the new system update because like, but like before he very clearly, like whenever he answered a question, cause everybody's always like, is Eddie also a dancer? Cause you did Step Up. And he's like, no, Eddie can't dance. Like, and he was always like, Eddie has no rhythm and can't dance. So he's clearly had to like change his vision for the character, which makes sense because it's like when you've got a when you have an actor who can do these things, like frequently the writers are like, well, let's make use of that. Like,
right.
And I support it.
It's a very cute scene
because I also want to see Eddie dance. Do it more. But yes, also with Eddie at the graduation ceremony, I laugh out loud whenever they do this because it's so obvious, at least to me. But it's like whenever they have like group scenes like this and they just like pick Ravi up and shove him in between Buck and Eddie.
Which they do a lot in the first half of the season.
Yeah, they do it a lot. But
it's the no homo move.
Yes, it's absolutely two bros sitting in a graduation ceremony audience, Ravi feet apart because they're not gay. But it's just like, I'm like, I see what you're doing. You're not fooling anyone. They're just like, and put Ravi in between so that the fans aren't like, see, they're sitting next to each other. When, come on, we all know. Like, even if they're just, like, super best friends and not gay for each other, those, like, when you go, like, sit in an audience with, like, your bestie's there, you're like, nobody sit next to me but my bestie. I want my bestie to sit next to me. Like,
but, poor Ravi.
Yeah. Poor Ravi. He's forever third wheeling these two guys. And it's just really funny. Like, keep doing it. It's really funny.
They will probably keep doing it forever.
They probably will.
Or until season 12 or whatever, when they finally.
Yeah. If ratings start to dip and Tim needs the ratings bump, then he'll dig into his Trump card. His instant ratings bump Trump card. Okay. I think that's everything that I made note of. Do you have any other thoughts?
No, I think we covered everything for me.
I love that jacket.
It's a great jacket. I don't know what people had a problem with about it.
Everyone fight me.
It's a fantastic jacket. I would not personally wear it, but it's a fantastic jacket on him.
Yes. Yeah. Also, like, I feel like that's also one of the things that I always felt was like, one of the points in favor of Buck always being bi is his vast collection of jackets.
He does have a collection.
Yeah.
It's our culture.
Yeah. I don't know. I just know that when I'm out, I'm like, oh, that's a cool jacket. Like, and I have to like stop myself from buying jackets. Like, I just like cool jackets. I feel that it is. It's part of our culture. I did like when in the team scene where they're talking about Hen not letting anyone. Well, first of all, I loved the don't reheat fish in the break room.
That is a crime. That is a crime. They should have dumped him off the balcony for that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I cannot. Yeah. He's like, I know. But it's better when it's warm. It's like, I don't care. Eat it cold. Just, what are you doing? But yeah, so just like such a real like workplace drama moment. But I loved in that moment where, I don't know, like the stuff Buck and Eddie were saying is sort of echoing what happens in the back half of the season of Buck being like, no, she needs support. She needs to accept our help. She needs all of us to like, she needs to let all of us be there for her. She can't like isolate herself. Like, that's not how you get better. And like, then it's like, so what do we do? And Eddie is like, we just keep showing up.
And in fact, in the back half of the season, that is exactly what he ends up doing.
Yeah. He just, you know, keeps showing up for Buck, even though Buck's not letting him in.
It's always easier when it's somebody else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Swallow your pride and let us all help you. But he does. He does let them all help. He does let them eventually. All help. Okay. Well, there's episode 9, Fighting Back. It was a good episode. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good episode.
Great Hen episode.
Yeah. And I did not look ahead. I don't know what's next.
Episode 10, and I don't remember the name of that.
Yeah. And I don't know what's in it. I don't know anything about it.
Very exciting. We'll find out next week.
Yeah. Okay. Find us on Tumblr if you want to disagree with us about Buck's jacket.
You're wrong, but we respect it.
And talk to you next time.